During the season of Lent so far, we've been hearing stories of God's covenants. And so far, we've done some of the big ones. We've done Noah in the flood, Abraham and Sarah, Moses in the Ten Commandments. These are stories most of us know, either because we've heard them so often, or we've seen one of the countless movies they've been made into. These are stories that live in our memories and have been canonized in our pop culture. About a month ago, I was at a bookstore trying to find a gift for someone, and I had some time to kill, so I went to the kids section with all the picture books about the Bible stories. And I wanted to see which ones from Lent they had. And if you want a book on Noah and the flood, you can take your pick. If you want a book about Sarah and Abraham, you might have to order it, but you can find it. If you want a book about Moses and in the Ten Commandments, the options are endless. But if you want a book about today's story with Moses and the snakes, then you're going to be looking for a long time. If Lent so far has been greatest hits of the Old Testament, then today we get to hear a B-side. In last week's reading about the Ten Commandments, we heard about one of the Israelites' central origin stories, about the formation of their covenant with God. God's led them out of slavery and has promised to be their God in the wilderness. Things are going to go well from now on. This time, things are going to be different. And it's not long before things start going downhill again. The Israelites were hungry, so God gave them this food called manna, which didn't taste good, but it was enough to get you by. And then Moses decides to take a detour around the land of Edom. And the people don't really like detours. The people don't want to take the scenic route to the promised land. They want to get to the promised land now. And this is the last straw. So the people complain. And they don't just complain to Moses like they always did. They started complaining directly to God. Why have you brought us up out of Egypt to die in the wilderness? For there is no food and no water, and we detest this miserable food. In other words, we don't have anything to eat, and it all tastes terrible. And if the Israelites didn't like the detour Moses took, if they didn't like the manna that God gave them, then it's about to get a whole lot worse. Because now they have to deal with snakes. And if you can't help but wonder, why did it have to be snakes? There's actually a good answer for you today. Because snakes have a symbolic role in the way the Israelites thought about creation. The Israelites understood creation as having these very hard boundaries. When God creates the world in the first Genesis telling, it's by separating things from one another. There's sea and there's land and they're separate. There's sky and there's land and they're separate. There were hard lines between all of these different parts of the earth. So for those Israelites, snakes posed something of a problem because they were land animals, but they didn't travel like other land animals did. They slithered around on their stomachs instead of walking around on their legs. So beyond any aesthetic or general creepiness aversion they had to snakes, snakes were a sign of disorder that somehow got into God's creation, something that really shouldn't have been there, but kept on showing up anyway. Now, we all live with snakes, of course. Reminders all around us that creation isn't working the way it's supposed to, that we don't enjoy the life that God intended for us. One of the most fundamental Christian beliefs about creation is that God didn't create suffering and death, that God created everything that is and called it good. Sin, suffering, and death have no useful purpose. They have no right to exist. They shouldn't be here, and yet they keep on creeping back in. And so the people understandably track down Moses and tell him to take the serpents away from us. And Moses dutifully goes off to talk to God. But surprisingly, God doesn't take the serpents away. God offers a different solution to the problem. Moses is told to make a bronze serpent and set it on top of a pole, and that whenever someone's bitten by a snake, God says, they will look at it and live. Now, the solution looking at this bronze snake probably comes across as a bit hucksterish to most of us, the kind of thing reserved for late-night televangelists, not the kind of remedy that God should be endorsing. The remedy seems absurd, but the logic of it has a kind of deep resonance in our lives. Because God says the healing, God says that the solution to the problem comes only from looking at the problem directly. Sometimes the only way to live is by facing the snake. Most of us aren't very good at facing the snake, of looking straight at it. We're very good at hiding it, of covering up sin and death, pushing aside the uncomfortable or inconvenient things in our lives. In a recent interview, Cardinal Tobin, who's the Archbishop of Newark, said that when it comes to generational poverty, we're developing what he calls a national cataract. That the problem isn't so much that we go around oppressing people who live in poverty, but we built a system in which we don't see people as they actually are, which means we often don't see them at all. That's true for poverty, but you could apply it to most of the other social ills that we live with. We so often develop cataracts that keep us from seeing what's right in front of us. Whenever there is a cover-up of abuse or a miscarriage of justice, we're often told that the system failed. And there's obviously cases where that's true, but the problem is often not that the system failed. The problem is often that the system worked. That the system has been set up to cover up problems, to pass the buck to someone else, to put up a good front. It's always easier not to face the snake and just hope that it doesn't bite you. Last Sunday, there was a big meeting up at Ramsey High School about opioid use in the community. And one of the things that was interesting was how many people seemed genuinely surprised that it could be an issue in a town like Ramsey, which every speaker at the meeting said over and over again was a very nice town. There were a lot of people who seemed genuinely shocked that this could be an issue worth taking seriously. Because when they first heard about it, they thought, well, it's just a drug user problem. And it got worse, and they thought, well, it's just a West Virginia problem. And it got even worse, and they said, well, it's just a Patterson problem. And they say that until one day it's actually your problem. In 2015, there were 288 overdoses in Bergen County. In 2016, there were 320 overdoses. And in 2017, there were 507. We often act like the snakes don't exist if we don't make eye contact with them. And so we often don't face the snake until it already has its teeth in us. One of the speakers at this meeting was a woman named Gail Cole, who lives down the hill in Allendale. And Gail runs a bereavement group out of our friends with Calvary Lutheran Church called Hope and Healing After an Addiction Loss. And Gail runs that group because her son died of an overdose 4 years ago while he was a student at the University of Richmond. He had surgery on his back, and his doctor gave him some painkillers, and you trust your doctor knows what they're doing, so he took them all. And he ended up getting hooked on them, and things went downhill from there. And one of the challenges that Gail talked about was the stigma in the community, this kind of resistance we have to acknowledging serious problems, because acknowledging they exist might actually make them real. And one of the things she said was that so many people thought the way that she did 5 years ago, that it wasn't a problem that affected families like hers. Because if you're a quote-unquote good parent and you send your kids to a good school and you live in a very nice town, then you're supposed to have a good life. And things like that aren't supposed to happen to you. And so Gail's life has been torn apart by her son's death, but part of her life now is helping clear the cataracts that we've developed, the cataracts that so often keep us from seeing what's right in front of us. And as Gail knows, there's no way to healing unless you face the snake head on. During one of our evening studies last Advent, we had a conversation about why Jesus died the way he did. Why and how does it matter that Jesus died on a cross? And there's no single answer to that question, but today's readings give us some language to talk about why it might matter. That Good Friday and Easter are God's way of facing the snake, of not avoiding the sorrows and burdens that we foist on one another, of not turning a blind eye to suffering. In Jesus, God takes death seriously enough to enter into it alongside all of us. So that just as Christ has the courage to bear the consequences of sin and death, even to the point of dying on a cross, we can look at the world without having our vision clouded by the cataracts of our convenience, and that we would all be given the courage to face the snake. Amen.